Fans, as a highlight on this Saturday, and Raf, I can't thank you enough for going back into the archives and coming out with a couple of real gems that we have for the fans this weekend. One is my interview with Bob Uecker. Of course, Bob Uecker, a Ford C. Frick Award winner as a broadcaster who will be enshrined and always will be there in the Hall of Fame. But he's been the Milwaukee Brewers radio broadcaster since 1971. Had a very interesting major league career that he always makes fun of, but he did hit a home run off Sandy Koufax. But, Raf, I can't thank you enough for going back probably about 20 years, I think, maybe a little bit less than that, for an interview I did with Bob Uecker that talks about his career, getting into baseball, how he got into broadcasting, and, of course, TV as well. So this one is gold, as Jerry Seinfeld likes to say. So here is my interview with the legendary, the great voice. All you have to do is hear his voice, the great Bob Uecker.
Marty Lurie here, and right off the bat tonight with Bob Uecker. Of course, always great to see him in the Bay Area. You know, I talk to people about baseball, and I know you use your baseball career sometimes to kind of lighten things up. But, you know, you came up with the Milwaukee Braves at a time when they had one heck of a pitching staff, and that was some era of baseball.
Yeah, Marty, it was at that time, it was after the Braves championship seasons in Milwaukee, which were 57, 58, and 59 in years that they probably should have won three and only won one, and maybe should have even won four or five. But you had a staff there, and of course a pretty good catcher in Del Crandall, and then Joe Torre came along. And Joe and I were the teammates there until I got traded to St. Louis. But you know, with guys like Spawn and Burdett and Buell and Joey Jay and Carlton Willie and Don McMahon, who was at that time what they would call a closer today. They had an outstanding starting staff. Guys like old Bob Rush and I mean, there were Juan Pizarro, who was a big bonus baby at that time, worth $30,000, which was a lot of money. An outstanding young left-hander. You know, the thing that was so different about those clubs, any club then and today, of course, is the amount of time a starting pitcher spends in a ball game. Back then, it was you know, you went nine or until you dropped, and then they brought somebody else in. And for the most part, starting pitchers at that time, unless you were really having a bad day, and I'm not saying everybody was a great pitcher in the league, but you stayed. And I mean, I've been in some games where managers came out to make a move with guys like a Spawn or Jim Bunning, a Bob Gibson, and they tell them to, you know, take a you-know-what. And, you know, they were going to finish the game themselves rather than have the bullpen possibly lose it. They would rather lose it themselves. But, you know, that team in Milwaukee at that time, too, with guys like Matthews and Adcock and Aaron and Frank Torrey and Logan. And I mean, they had a great ball club, too. It was a great bunch of individuals, which, you know, I think a lot of guys, and even experiencing this club in Milwaukee today and in years past, you know, every club I was with was a veteran ball club. We didn't have a lot of young guys. I mean, I might have been one of the youngest guys at 27 or 28. They were built around veterans, and every once in a while a younger player would come up, a McCarver-type guy, a Steve Carlton, somebody like that. But for the most part, they were veteran clubs. And today you have a lot of players who are in the big leagues and are force-fed, so to speak. Might be better off with another year or two in the minor leagues, and maybe even three, but organizations don't keep guys around the way they used to. You know, years ago, you could stay in an organization 15 years. You know, you could spend 10 of those years in the minor leagues and develop a relationship with somebody in that particular city and get married and raise a family and everything else, which is totally different today. But, you know, I respect the players today, and in looking at what you have here in Oakland with the outstanding young pitching. I mean, you lost a couple of good players in the Giambi boys, but you still got some quality players here who I see from time to time in Arizona in the wintertime. I get to see Mulder and Lytle and Chavez and play golf with those guys. So you got a solid outfit here, you know, and it's nice to be back here. We haven't been back here since 1997, so it's nice to come back and see the A's.
Bob Uecker, our guest on Right Off the Bat. Nice to see him in the Bay Area. You know, Lou Burdett, You know, he admits he threw the spitter. And I talked to Bob Roselli, who was a backup catcher in the Milwaukee Braves in 55, 56 in those days. And he told me the way Burdette used to call it. And he'd say, hey, just get down and here it comes. What was it like to catch Lou Burdette and the spitter? Maybe one of the most famous of all time.
I don't know how he got it. I mean, to those of us who were on the same team, and I remember Bertie Tebbets, who was a Cincinnati Reds manager at that time, they had three cameras on Lou Burdette in one particular game, and he still threw one after another. You know, Burdette wasn't one of those guys who would throw it consistently unless you started stepping out of the box on him, you know. If you started stepping out of the box on him and asking the umpire to look at the ball all the time, he would throw it one after another. And there were times when he didn't have it loaded, and if the umpire called for the ball, he would roll it in there just to aggravate people. But we used to use a tug on the chest protector. Go down in the crouch and then just take the protector and tug on it. And that meant, you know, that we were looking for it because it used to explode. It wasn't only him. There were a lot of other guys that threw them too. And it was one of those kinds of pitches where, you know, it was a fastball till it got out in front of him and all of a sudden the bottom dropped out of it. But Lou had the uncanny ability. He had a little, I still think he did it through his front teeth. He had a little hole in his front teeth where he could do it that way. But he's throwing mud balls and everything. He'd take a baseball and get a little saliva on it. He'd tap it on the ground when he'd go down to get the rosin bag. He'd put it on the ground and it got a little mud on it. And I mean, it would sink one way or the other. That one he couldn't control. But he threw that thing, and it was another one of those wacky pitches that Lou Burdette used to throw. And he got such a kick out of life and out of baseball. As a matter of fact, he's coming up to the All-Star game this year in Milwaukee, along with Warren Spahn and Henry Aaron. The game is in Milwaukee this summer, so it's going to be nice to see him again. I haven't seen Lou in a while. And, you know, we're all getting up in years, and he's still always been and always will be one of my favorite people.
You made the transition from playing baseball into the entertainment field. I don't know if the skills transfer or not, but there's a certain excitement of being a major league player, and there's a certain excitement of being in Hollywood. You did it. Did the skills transfer, and how did it happen?
I don't really know how it happened. I was always, I think my parents probably spent more time in school than I did because I messed around so much. And with the acting part, you know, a lot of it stemmed from hanging around in the bullpen as much as I did. I used to always do imitations of Harry Carey when he was broadcasting Cardinal baseball games. I did things on buses. I mean, I never did during the game when the game was on and I was playing the game. I was like everybody else. But during those times when I wasn't playing, I like to make people laugh. And sometimes it came at the expense of my playing, which I didn't appreciate too much. But, you know, they laughed at the way I played. That was okay, too. I didn't care. But I started doing stand-up comedy. I started doing the banquet circuit. And then I did the first Tonight Show in 1969, and that led to a lot of other different things. And, of course, the Miller Lite beer commercials, and I did the Mr. Belvedere series for 6 years that came out of nowhere. I had no idea. I had a lady in California who was taking care of the things I was doing outside of baseball, and she called me and told me that they wanted me to do this show. I didn't have to audition. They had a part, they wrote the part in for me, and that was the only way the show went on, to get me to play opposite Christopher Hewitt, where we could have some conflicts. And the show lasted 6 years, and I always enjoyed it. I still see those people that worked on the show. I always enjoyed that. I really did. Not only the people that were out in front, but the behind-the-scenes people, too, who... the prop people and everybody else who it took to put that show together. I enjoy them to this day. I just saw them. We were out in L.A. just a couple of weeks ago, and I saw everybody. It's amazing how the kids have grown. The youngest girl now has two kids of her own, and it's quite unique and neat. But I never really did anything. I never took anything serious, I guess. I never took that stuff serious, you know, because this to me was always number one. Baseball was always number one, and you know the Monday night stuff and the NBC stuff. I wanted to do that, but only to a certain point. This for me is primo, doing the radio and being with these guys each and every day. I've enjoyed it tremendously.
Well, you know, you're in Major League, and I don't know, every time you see a pitcher throw a pitch high and outside, I swear they give the line. Give us the line one more time.
Just a bit outside. But, you know, those films, too, were a lot of fun. And David Ward, who directed those films, told me to be this guy, this Harry Doyle guy. And they wrote a script, so to speak, but I used basically very little from what they wrote. He wanted me to do what I do on the air, with the exception of, you know, I can't say a lot of the things on the air that we did in there, but I wouldn't say really bad words in the movie. They wanted me to do that, and I wouldn't do that because I know, you know, with our audience in Milwaukee, and at that time I was doing the light stuff, I didn't want people to think of me as a foul-mouthed sportscaster. But I put that script down by my feet, and then I would make up these lines as I went along. And you have to work a lot more because they want you to do more ad-lib lines. You know, yeah, do more like that, do more like that. Well, you're working a lot more than you normally would, but weird things come to my mind really easy. You know, I can do it. Even on our broadcast, I do it sometimes, depending on where the game is and if we're getting our brains beat out or if we're beating somebody else's brains out. I think you have to do things other than, you know, a straight broadcast to let people have some fun. And I've been there in Milwaukee now. This is my 32nd year. So, you know, I've had a good time doing it all.
Well, pleasure to have you on right off the bat. Mr. Baseball, as they call him. Really nice to see you in the Bay Area. Bob Uecker, thanks so much.
All right, Marty, thank you.
We'll be back with more right after these messages. Yeah.